This is Spectator Radio, the Spectator's curated podcast collection.
Welcome to Table Talk. I'm Olivia Potts, the Spectator's vintage chef. And today, Table Talk is coming to you live from Chelsea Flower Show. And we are delighted to not only be joined by Jo Thompson, but to be in her Chelsea Flower Show garden today. Jo, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Jo Thompson is a garden designer who has won four RHS Chelsea gold medals. She's known for her commonsensical, no-nonsense, practical approach to gardening. But looking here today at the gardens, we can see it's also incredibly beautiful. We are going to begin at the very beginning, as we always do. You grew up in Rome.
I spent a lot of time in Rome as a child. Yes, my father is Italian and he's one of five brothers and they're all in Rome. So I spent my childhood between England and Rome.
And your father was a restaurateur in
Italy.
That's
right. He opened restaurants in England. He started off as a kind of very minor cocktail waiter in the Via Veneto in the time of the Dolce Vita. So having Marcello Mastroianni coming in and having a wonderful time, but then came to England to set up restaurants.
And that must have influenced your childhood eating, having that kind of food heritage in your family.
It really did. I mean, I didn't see ketchup till I was 18 because he thought it was a complete aberration. And the same with brown sauce, you know, anything like that. The Italians were just absolutely, you know, not allowed in the house. The great thing was that my aunts would teach my mother certain dishes.
Your mother was English.
Mother is English. She's here today, actually. Aww. Which is lovely. So there were certain dishes that she, you know, they're still in her repertoire and are real favourites, like the chopped up chicken that we always used to call it. It was basically, you know, chicken and olive oil and garlic and a little bit of wine, a little bit of lemon.
And would you find that it was more your aunts that were cooking in your family when you were younger? I mean, restaurant running doesn't leave a lot of time to be at home cooking, and often you don't want to when you spend all day working with food.
That's right. And also, my father wasn't a chef. I mean, he had the concept. He knows what he likes to eat, but a bit like me, he's a firm believer in everybody doing what they're best at, so he had amazing chefs.
And in terms of cooking in the family when you were younger, did you learn to cook at all from your mother, from your aunts?
I did. I learned how to cook pasta and how to cook pasta properly. So I know an overcooked pasta within 20 paces. So very simple things I learned, but then more complicated. And I somehow was never sort of involved in the more complicated cooking, but I ate a lot of it.
So it sounds like you ate very well as a
child.
Yeah,
really well. And my father was always a firm believer in taking us to the best restaurants, not in terms of the most expensive restaurants, but just the restaurants with the best food, which might be in Rome, just, you know, in a little alcove off a side street, and he'd know where the best food was.
So you ate out quite a lot as a child through your father. Was that something that has carried on into adult life, or are you a big home cook?
I'm a terrible home cook. I love to go out. I really, my children love to go out, and we, you know, going out to eat is such a huge pleasure. But I am an appalling cook, so much so that actually a great friend and I, she's an appalling gardener. We started emailing each other questions, and somehow they've become a book, which is going to be published next year.
This is Rhubarb Rhubarb.
Yes, that's right.
Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, it really is. We've termed it Letters from a Hopeless Gardener to a Hopeless Cook. And there are things that I find so simple, i.e. when to plant your bulbs and how many to plant, which to Mary Jane, my co-author, are really, you know, hard to understand. And I will write to her and say, oh my goodness, I've got, you know, three girlfriends coming for supper, what do I do? Because that to me strikes fear into my very soul. But she'll just come up with a lovely salad, and we put all these recipes, all these gardening tips together. We're it's slightly irreverent, it's very down to earth, and it's just about hopefully giving people ideas without being, you know, overcomplicated or just very down to earth.
It sounds very practical, very functional, which is what your gardens and your style is known for.
Yeah, I would absolutely say that. It's down to earth. The plants in this garden here at Chelsea, I was explaining to lots of people today, is that none of them are very complicated. There are roses, there are geraniums, there are iris. There's nothing here in this garden that I can't grow myself at home. And I think that's part of the message, if any, that this garden has, is that you can have fun with very simple plants, but yet create some quite good combinations.
And you've said before that it's important to you and to your gardens that everything works with the context around it, that a garden doesn't just look inward. Looking at that context from a food point of view, what makes a really good meal to you?
Well, for me, what makes a really good meal, I would say, is pasta. Again, I go. The simple things, you know, pasta with a lovely tomato sauce and some mozzarella popped in the oven, baked. You know, that to me is the perfect. It is so simple, but so delicious. And my children, I've had that from childhood. I can make it without looking at the recipe, which is unusual. And my children love it too. When they come home from school and university, that's what they want to eat.
Well, you have serious mozzarella credentials, I understand. please tell us about your family history of mozzarella.
Well, my father originally comes from an area just halfway between Naples and Rome, which is famous for its mozzarella. And my great uncle had a farm. He used to farm water buffaloes. And they made the most extraordinary mozzarella. And my memory is of him calling in the water buffalo, each one by name, each evening back to the stable. It's extraordinary. And they knew it. And he would just sort of chant their names and they would come trudging in. and then, you know, we would have the most delicious mozzarella, which when it's straight, when it, you know, freshly eaten, fresh, is like velvet cream. It's just wonderful.
That must ruin you for life for supermarket value mozzarella in England.
It really does. Even, you know, buffalo, I mean, I can't go near mozzarella that isn't buffalo mozzarella, but even buffalo mozzarella is just never the same as that you've just bought in a bag, sitting in a bag of water from a stall on the side of the road in southern Italy.
And you've told us about your aunts teaching your mother the necessary Italian dishes. Does your mother do English cooking? Is that something that you ever do in your own kitchen? You've told us about the mozzarella and the pasta.
I don't. I have a huge amount of cookery books, not as big as my mother's selection of cookery books, but I have a huge collection, and I don't use them because I get scared. I get very scared about cooking things like roast beef. Roasting meat scares me. I love it. You know, I love roast beef on a Sunday, but somehow I never get it right. However, I think it involves precision. Maybe I overthink it, I don't know, but I do. I love eating the, you know, traditional English food, as I say, roast, Yorkshire pudding, yum. But I'm not very good at it.
And it sounds like rhubarb is there to give confidence to cooks like you and gardeners like your co-author. But that confidence is integral for something like roasting meats, where you just don't know whether or not you're getting it right.
Yeah, it really is. And I think that's what Mary Jane tries to do with me, is what I'm trying to do with her. She said, don't overthink it. You know, I'm there with the book and the charts. And what I then do is get another book with their charts, and they're all slightly different. And I just don't. And then I've got another one. And this is what I'll do, you know, trying to make an apple crumble. I will have four recipes for crumble. And somebody else would laugh at me and just say, crumble is crumble. You know, you didn't even need to think about it. It's flour and sugar and butter or whatever. But to me, I've got, you know, because I don't necessarily understand it. I think that's what it is, that it just doesn't come naturally. Yeah. And then maybe, and I see that when I go to see clients and talking about their gardens, and they're saying, oh, you know, plant, I'm a bit scared of plants. I don't know how to plant. And I don't know what to plant. And I'm saying, it's easy. You know, you can put geranium in with a rose. You know, that's easy. It'll work. So it is that not overthinking and just relaxing.
So it's about, for you, it's about demystifying gardening for others. And for Mary Jane, it's about demystifying cooking for people who want to enjoy it but are scared.
Absolutely. So hopefully it will be of use.
And what would your ideal desert island meal be?
I think it would have to be the baked pasta that I just mentioned. I really do. It's a toss-up between that and the chopped-up chicken, but I think it's the baked pasta.
And do you have a sweet tooth?
I don't really. I think my mother put the fear of God into me when I was little about dentists and fillings, and so I've never boiled sweets. I can't go near. But, and I think as I've got older, it's got less and less of a sweet tooth, but there is one Italian cake tart, really, that I just made for my father this Easter, actually, which is an Italian Easter tart, which most people say, oh my God, you know, it sounds revolting. It's called pastiera, and it's a kind of soaked wheat, and it's kind of custard tart, really, but it's also got a soaked wheat in there to kind of bulk it up, and orange blossom water, which my daughter said smelt like bubble bath. So nobody but my father and I tucked into it very happily. And again, part of that is memories, because I remember making it with cousins when I was little. And so, you know, it's not just about what you're eating, it's about all the memories that eating that and sharing that brings with it.
And we hear a lot about English food changing when we have chefs from England on. Do you think Italian food's changed in your lifetime?
I think it has. I think the portion sizes are getting a little bit smaller, which is good. I think the pasta, I think, you know, I can remember sort of aunts trying to force feed me piles of, you know, mounds of pasta. So I think it's sort of getting a bit less, but I think essentially there is still this fabulous region to region hanging on to their own particular dishes and their own particular styles, which I think, yeah, which is incredibly important. So I'd say it's sort of, it's kind of changing, but not, which is a good thing.
And very finally, and frivolously, what's your favourite snack food?
My favourite snack food is a rich tea biscuit.
Oh, that's lovely.
I love it. And a cup of tea to dunk it in.
Perfect. Jo, thank you so much for joining us on Table Talk. It's been a complete pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on The Spectator's Food and Drink Podcast. For more recipes, food history, stories and drinks, you can head to The Spectator website.